Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of the Ringside Rundown Podcast. My name is Eric Vasquez, and joining me on the line is my podcasting partner in crime. Yes, that rhymes. She is Shay Hickson. Shay, what's going on, my friend?
What is up on this fine Tuesday evening? Yeah.
It's all a blur.
It really is after a while, but we're here. We got some questions. We're gonna have a good episode.
Yeah, you realize I didn't do my long elaborate intro. That's because we have a massive amount of questions because this past weekend was SummerSlam, so that takes up a bulk. And for those that are new listening here, this is a professional wrestling podcast where Shay and I discuss the world of professional wrestling and what's going on there. And the way we do it is we open up the mailbox for our loyal listeners to send in questions, ask us stuff they want to get our answers on, our opinions on. And don't you worry, if you're a new listener, just pay attention to the end of the show and you can find out where you can send in your question to join in on the fun. But again, we have a massive, massive mailbag segment. We don't want to be here till the morning hours because Shay has to go to work and I don't. So we're going to try to get through this as best as possible, give you all the best answers, but we're definitely going to, I guess you would say, rocket through it.
I guess, yeah, if you want to put it. Yeah, sure. We'll speed through it, but in a quality answer.
Right, because knowing us, we'll say we'll rocket through it, but like we'll get a question that'll get our minds going and we'll go on a full tangent.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. We'll see, because we have, if I remember correctly, 31 questions today, so...
31?
Yeah, 31, so everyone was excited for SummerSlam, which I get. It was a pretty decent show. I really didn't have a lot of complaints. So let's just get right into it, because we've got quite a ways to go. So we're going to start with Jeff's questions, and his first one is... Can we please stop putting Charlotte into the title matches she hasn't earned? She doesn't need to be in them anymore. If anything, she should be working to help bolster the division, not hold them back. I mean, that's a pretty common gripe with her at this point, is you go, we've talked about it before, she leaves for like 6 months, comes back, immediately is in a title shot, wins the title, loses the title, rinse and repeat. I mean, luckily we didn't have the winning the title part to keep the cycle going, but it's just people are kind of getting tired of just the fact of you need to come back and actually earn the title shot, not just because you're Charlotte and I can just waltz in and, you know, do it. It gets very old very quick, and this instance was no different.
I agree, and it's no slight to Charlotte, but I do agree that maybe she would be better at this point to maybe have a couple feuds that are outside of the title picture that just showed that there's like she has, you know, different dimensions to her, different levels to her, that she doesn't necessarily always have to be in the title picture to put on main event caliber performances and things of that nature. And, you know, working with someone younger talent, maybe that would be cool, or maybe have her do a couple spots in NXT. That wouldn't hurt either, but yeah, I mean, I understand the gripe with Charlotte, because I've had the same sort of gripes with her. Like, she doesn't necessarily have to be in the title picture, especially when she goes on hiatus for like 3 months and then, you know, and then she comes back, you know, and then automatically she's in the picture. So obviously I have something like, that's my gripe with her, but like, if she was to work with other people, not necessarily in the title picture, it'll just so that she has different levels to her, different dimensions. You know, she could work different storylines in something that's not centered around the title.
But the thing is she going to be able to rise to that occasion when she doesn't have a title to fight for? Or is she just going to be like, well, I don't give a shit because it's not for a title?
Yeah, that's also the same sort of gripe we always had with Charlotte before, you know, that she kind of picks and chooses when she wants to give it her all. So you know, that remains to be seen.
Which I mean, we'll see what happens, but are we gonna really be surprised if that's not the case? Eh, oh well. But speaking of Charlotte, Jeff's next question is, maybe it was just him, but did we notice all the botches and misses in the triple threat match at SummerSlam? He's not sure why those three had such a hard time working together, but we deserve better, and he obviously blames Charlotte getting added into the match for it. I'm just gonna flat out say it. I don't really think it was one singular person's fault. I just feel like it was just a lack of chemistry between the three of them. So, yeah, I think that's more or less it. But, yeah.
Yeah, there was a couple spots that were a little wonky, and I was like, yeah, that's not gonna go over well on the internet. But overall, as far as the match, I really enjoyed the setup to the finish. You know, Bianca bangs her knee, sells it like death. She goes off. Charlotte and Asuka are battling. And then right when Charlotte has the figure eight on Asuka, Bianca somehow manages to get back into the match and hits that one-legged 450. Big spot right there that got the crowd hyped. And then Asuka coming in when Charlotte had the figure eight on Bianca, spraying the mist, going after Bianca. Bianca gets the roll up while still in the figure four. And then obviously the whole situation with Io. So like the finish to the match was really, really interesting and really creative. It was just getting there. The one thing I will say is I feel like towards the end, they did kind of get the crowd on their side in terms of their attention. So that's the one bright spot. And again, the finish was creative, and obviously all that kind of goes to the wayside once you see what happens with Io coming in and winning the title that way. So
I agree with that one. It was the ending was great, but like you touched on, it just felt off in some places. It wasn't like terrible. It was just there, like you said, some spots where it's like, oh, that didn't look good at all. But overall, I'd say it was a decent match. It wasn't definitely a memorable one that I'm going to go rewatch later, but I'm also not going to be like, yeah, that was terrible, I hated it. We're going to flip some of his order questions around a little bit. Speaking of the Bianca Belair injury, did we think that was legit or a work? If it's a work, she deserves a damn Oscar for that performance. It sounded like she broke her leg in five spots when she screamed. I definitely think it was a work. I don't think it was real, but yeah, she did a very good job of selling it. She almost fooled me for a little bit.
I bought into it, you know. Even when she was making her way back to the ring, I was like, I don't know. She seemed pretty hurt because the way she sold it so well. You know, it was just fantastic. But it added to the match when she hit that one-legged 450 just spot on and made Charlotte go splat right there to the mat. Yeah. So that was pretty cool. It's interesting to note that Bianca has not only the longest reign in modern wrestling history for the women, but she also has the shortest reign with the new title as well. So good on Bianca to pencil her way into the record books.
Setting all the records.
Yeah.
Good, bad, and indifferent. Alrighty, so what could possibly be the end game in the never-ending saga that is the Bloodline? Because every week something happens and things change, and with Jimmy turning on Jay, which none of us saw coming, how do we accept going forward that the greatest tag team in WWE history is broken up?
I mean, as far as what they can do next, I have no clue. Like, I have.
Yeah, we don't even know anymore.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where it's like, time to just ride it out, you know, like, you know, see what happens, because this is just crazy. And then you see the press conference and Paul Heyman's like, yeah, we're just in the bottom of the third inning. And I'm like, this guy's fucking insane.
please tell me you're joking, right? Just like, please.
Yeah, it's just crazy. So as far as like what they can do to continue the story, I have no clue. There, I will say, as good as it is, you know, it's the greatest storyline in the modern era, whatever, what have you, they walk a real fine line, you know, stretching this out. You know, you already see some rumblings online. I'm okay with the way things went down, despite the Usos breaking up, because they're my favorite tag team. I still think they're the greatest tag team in all of wrestling. So how they're going to do this, how they're going to make it interesting, how they're going to not only make the Jimmy versus Jay aspect interesting, but not take shine off of the Universal Champion. That's always been a big thing for me, no matter what promotion is, you know, no matter the time period of wrestling, the world champion, it should be head above the rest of the roster. You don't want to take shine off the champion. So how they maneuver their ways to keep shine on Roman as the Universal Champion, but also make these different aspects of the bloodline interesting, is going to be a very telling aspect of WWE programming, because basically their success in terms of what they're doing at these live events and the amount of money that they're raking in and the amount of eyes that they have on a product, it really is on the back of what's been going on with the bloodline and everything for the past 3.5 years.
Yeah, we've said it before and we'll say it again. We do not envy the creative team or whoever's doing it at all, because it makes my head hurt just watching it. Imagine just like trying to put it together, honestly.
Yeah, it's insane.
It's wild. It's cool, but wild. Well, we'll just keep going off of that. What do we think about the rumor that Roman Reigns and Paul Heyman control just how long his reign's going to last, and that Roman wants the person to dethrone him to be someone worthy of doing so? It almost feels like the Undertaker streak, except Vince isn't there to throw Lesnar into it. Thank God for that. I mean, I could see that going well. I mean, clearly it's gone well so far, but I could also see where it's going to be bad, where maybe after a while they're like, yeah, just keep going because there's nobody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that could be a very dangerous game, because then if you just have the title on him for no reason whatsoever other than there's nobody that can beat him, that's when you start to get a little stale and the fans get mad, and they're a very fickle bunch, as we've known. So yeah, I don't... They're the ones that I don't envy then, clearly, if they're the ones that have to call the shots in this. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think they do have some creative input and maybe a smattering of creative control. I don't think WWE would put themselves in the position where they would give a talent, you know, 100% creative control, because we if we know wrestling history, that really doesn't go well. I think Paul Heyman's just working, you know, just getting the fans into a tizzy. But I do agree that they probably have some creative input. Roman's in a position where he probably can say, you know, he can speak his mind freely and not have to feel reserved. And then when it comes to Paul Heyman, no matter what you say about Paul Heyman, he's a creative genius. He thinks outside the box. He sees things from all peripherals. So, he's just a creative genius. So he probably, in terms of the creative, is probably the one kind of overseeing things. But as far as like he and Roman having 100% creative control, I don't think that that's possible in the land of WWE. As far as like Roman, you know, giving the title whoever he sees fit, that's tough, because he's ran through the competition, you know, which is good, because I mean, again, he's the champion. He should be head and shoulders above the rest of the roster. But it's just like, who's next? It's almost like the Hogan issue back in like the mid 80s, you know, and late 80s. It's like they kept feeding people to Hogan. He would beat them 1, 2, 3. Next guy would come in, and then after a while it was just like, who's next? You know? Yeah. So, but again, in terms of the bloodline, I'm invested still in the story, so I'm just willing to go on wherever they take me as far as the roller coaster ride.
Yeah, at this rate, it's almost just like, there's no point even trying to figure it out. It's just like, yeah, okay, sure, whatever you guys do next, fine. Like, this is fine.
Yeah.
Alrighty, where do the likes of Finn Balor, Cody Rhodes, and LA Knight go from here? Jeff can't see them giving Finn another shot at Seth. Absolutely not. Like, that's not happening. Cody, who the fuck knows, and will they really risk halting Knight's momentum by feeding him to Reigns? I don't think they're going to give him to Reigns.
Oh,
I don't think. They'll do another, like, a secondary title probably with him. Finn obviously has his own issues with the Judgment Day right now. And Cody, yeah, I don't know what Cody's doing, to be honest. Just kind of there, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, as far as, like, Finn Balor, like you said, it's an interesting aspect of the Judgment Day, this little issues that are brewing between him and Damian being the Money in the Bank briefcase holder, Finn obviously wanting to be World Heavyweight Champion. He, in the beginning of Raw last night, it seemed like he kind of finagled his way back into the picture, but then as we saw at the end of Raw last night, the turn of Shinsuke Nakamura. Yeah. So
Jesus, that was wild. Where it's just Kinshasa and then just leaves.
Yeah, that was. I didn't see it coming, but I felt like something was happening. You know, he was kind of his posture, you know, in the ring was different when they won the match, and then I'm like, well, why would he pull double duty out of nowhere? You know, after saying, you know, he's tired of, you know, he wants to go for gold. So, as far as Finn Balor, I don't know, but I'm very interested in what's going on with the Judgment Day. I think aside from the bloodline, that's an interesting aspect of the WWE product. Cody Rhodes, it just seems like whatever position they put Cody Rhodes in, he knocks it out of the park. And you know, the conclusion of this Lesnar saga was just fantastic. The match that they had at SummerSlam was great, because to me it was like the majority of the match Brock was just beating the shit out of Cody.
Yeah.
And Cody's such a good guy that the crowd was still rooting for him and believing in him and wanting to will him on to win that match, which is very hard to do this day and age when it comes to good guys, because the crowd can be a little bit skeptical. And I think that's why towards the end Cody's run in AEW didn't work, because they didn't want a rah-rah good guy. They wanted a badass, you know, someone with a little bit of edge. But like, Cody has that ultimate good guy to him that it kind of caters to the WWE audience better. But as far as what he can do, I mean, it's tough, because you want to see him back in the spot with Roman, you know, especially at WrestleMania to have that stage. But we're ways away from WrestleMania. You know, so how do you get there with Cody? You know, how do you make that? How do you keep him interesting? Make sure he keeps hitting everything out of the park, so that way when March, April rolls around, you know, you could put him in that position and it makes sense. That's the most important part. It's just to make sure it makes sense. And LA Knight, I mean, finally they did something that the people and the people in charge of WWE finally synced up, you know, to have that moment with LA Knight. So he's so popular right now. No, whatever you do, I mean, I would set him up with Austin Theory. They kind of did the thing with The Miz, but then you have to explain that maybe he's coming from SmackDown to Raw. I think that a situation with The Miz would be very interesting, because they're kind of the same. Miz just has a little bit more WWE veteran experience than LA Knight does, but LA Knight has been, as he said last night on Raw, he's been in the game for over 20 years, so you know, he's seen it all, he's done it all, and now he's at the, you know, the peak of his career. And I think jumping from The Miz, then you go to Austin Theory, you build up some equity there that keeps people interested.
Yeah, I totally agree. Couldn't have said it better myself. All right, so now we're into my territory now. So do we think the supposed, we have to always say supposed, rumored creative issues between Rousey, Baszler, and the creative team was the reason the match didn't live up to expectations? Okay, so was I let down a little bit by the match itself? Yes, but I didn't think it was terrible. I don't think it warranted that this is boring chance, but here's the problem. You literally put it after the Battle Royal, where LA Knight won, so clearly big moment. Mm-hmm. Here's my problem. When you put an MMA style match in a section of the sport where people, let's be completely honest, kind of are more leaning towards like the big moves and the high flying and, oh my God, the spectacle. Of course, they're not going to cling to it. They're really not. And it's just, I feel like they were holding back almost. Mm-hmm. They could have done so much more with it, but the stuff they did do, I'm like, okay, this is, I felt like it was going to go somewhere and it just didn't fully get there. And then we don't really know if Shayna actually did hurt her arm or something, which I'm praying to God she didn't, which, I mean, she wrestled on Raw, so maybe that's a sign that it's not bad. But I feel like they could have been a lot more brutal with it, but clearly the creative team got in the way. And because I think I heard that they wanted it to be more of like a last man standing, like no holds barred kind of match, but you don't have those necessarily those same rules in MMA. And then you also, why do you have a WWE referee if you have an MMA match? I mean, you couldn't have just went to Dana White and been like, hey, can we borrow one of your refs real quick? It wasn't as good as it could have been, but it also wasn't terrible. So people can back off. It's just like, that's just the problem. We've said it before with wrestlers like Shayna, like Karrion Kross. It's just that their style of wrestling is a very niche kind of style that not everyone likes because it's not flashy. It's not sensational. It's not over the top. It's just ground and pound. I'm going to rip your arm off and beat you over the head with it kind of style. And that's not everybody's cup of tea, which is fine. It was just the luck was not on their side on that one, I don't think. But
Yeah.
I'm sure the issues didn't help either.
The problem I have is, like, I think we were like a week away from SummerSlam, and all of a sudden they go, oh, this is an MMA rules match.
Yeah.
You know? Didn't where if, time. Yeah, if they would have done that, you know, from the get-go, you know, and did some vignettes that way, you know, they probably could have got people more invested. I would have loved this to be one of those fight pit matches.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. That would have been, oh, good Lord, that would have been. You thought what Shayna looked like now is bad? Could you imagine what she would have looked like in a fight pit? Like, good Lord.
Yeah, that would have been great. I think the fight pit would have been perfect. As far as the matches, it's basically like you said, you hit the nail on the coffin there. It wasn't bad. There's a little bit more that they could have done to, you know, there was a little bit more to be desired. You know, but there were some big spots, you know, Shayna with that roundhouse kick to the head, knocking Ronda, and then Ronda with that step up knee strike that gave Shayna that shiner, you know, that was some good stuff. But that was probably the stuff that people were looking for if they were paying attention to this match, you know. So if they would have gave them just a tad bit more violence, know, it would have probably put the match over. As far as the live audience, you know, the live audience is what it is. You know, you got to sometimes work to change their minds, but sometimes it just doesn't happen. I think the blessing in disguise is that, like, people wanted to see Ronda go away. And so Shayna was the one to make it happen. So it's so facto, Shayna becomes a pseudo baby face, you know, getting the cheers because
that was fun.
Yeah, you know, because she made Ronda go away, and like everything Shayna said from the get-go was believable. You bought into it. So I think like people finally got that glimpse of Shayna the assassin. They saw what Shayna brings to the table, you know, and they finally could see that she's not one to mess with. She's probably the killer that is in Shayna Baszler is probably what they wanted from Ronda Rousey, but they never got it.
Yep.
You know,
absolutely. It was that's why that joke of like when Ronda tried to say, oh, you're just a knockoff version of me. It's just like, nah, I think you're kind of a knockoff version of Shayna, but
yeah,
we don't want to have that conversation yet, but it's the truth. Also, granted this is going to come out tomorrow, but it is Shayna's birthday. So happy birthday to Shayna. Greatest day in history, of course, as it should be. So, yes, happy birthday to Shayna. glad to see her finally just getting to show everybody what she's made of and what I've known for years. So it's, I'm glad they're finally giving her some time to shine. So
I agree.
I can't complain. Alrighty. So up next, apparently the Joshi promotion coming to the US apparently has their first show booked in September in New York City. And the only names that Jeff knows so far are Bull Nakano, which I think that's already a big deal in and of itself.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Tomoka Inaba and Arisa Nakajima. He's going to keep us posted, which we always appreciate because he is our go-to guy with the Joshi wrestling. Yeah, having Bull Nakano on that show is a big deal. Like that's
yeah, the legend.
That is impressive, and God help whoever has to face her, because yikes, that's gonna hurt. But
yeah, the legend. That's really cool that they're doing this and they're bringing it to New York, which is obviously a big market. So they're not joking around when it comes to what they want to do with their product and bringing it to the masses. So this will be very interesting to see if they can pull this off.
Yeah, I completely agree. So hopefully Jeff will keep us updated on that, and we will report back to you guys when we get it. So, alrighty. Then, Holy Shida, did we expect Hikaru Shida to win that title for the second time? Because Jeff sure as hell didn't, but he couldn't think of anyone outside of Hayter or Britt who can carry the division on their shoulders like Shida can. Mm-hmm. I agree. I mean, she was the COVID champion. I mean, not in a derogatory way, but it was the truth. She got that division through the COVID era of wrestling. And we said it way back then. We could say it again. I don't think a lot of people would have been well equipped to do that, but she was. And to see her get that title again, it's, you know, I'd rather have it on her than Tony at this rate, because I don't even think they know what they're doing with the Outcasts or whatever, because as usual, Saraya was just like, I don't know what's going on. I have no idea what's happening, but yeah, well, now apparently Tony's a disgraced like 1950s TV actress or something. Now she had that very dramatic promo on Collision. It's just like, okay, great. I'm glad that's your answer to things, but yeah, no, I definitely wasn't expecting Shida to win at all. I flat out said, oh great, here we go, you're gonna give Shida to Tony just to beat up and whatever, fantastic. And then it's like, oh shit, she actually won. So
yeah,
I'm not complaining about it. It's just a matter of what are you doing for All In then, because you know that's a thing coming up.
Yeah I was, like you said, I was pleasantly surprised Shida got the win. Definitely well deserving, because she was the glue that held the women's division together during the pandemic. And she, you know, she was one of the ones, a lot like Riho, where you were like, I don't know. I don't really know a lot about her. I'm not familiar with her game. And then when you got used to her, you were like, oh, she's the real deal. You know, the one thing I would say is like Shida winning, I feel like it was universally like, this is a good idea from the fans online, the casual fans that watch AEW, just all around, everyone was like, Shida winning, that's a great idea. And I don't think it was a slight to Toni Storm, who's really good in the ring. But I just feel like people see something in Shida. She's different. She brings a different level of intensity, but she's also very personable. You know, so she has that going for her. But again, her winning, it was like universally within the wrestling world, it was like, this is a good idea. This is great. We're on board with this, and we're glad that Shida's the champion.
Yeah, I completely agree. And now we just wait and see what happens next, because they got an uphill battle to climb when it comes to the women's division. So hopefully
at this point, everyone does, no matter what promotion, when it comes to your women's division.
Honestly, I do think we have a question about it, but yeah, it's like, good God, I don't know what the hell's going on with women's wrestling right now, but I can stop anytime now, because it's not fun. It's not fun anymore, but yeah. Women's wrestling as a whole is kind of a mess right now, but we'll save that one for later. So, All right, how cool is it that the two biggest promotions in the U.S. have Joshi talents as their women's champions? Obviously, Shida and Io Sky. Io cashing in was perfection, as was Celebration. I love that Dakota was actually there. That made my heart feel all the nice fuzzies, so that was cool. So Jeff hopes Io has a long and prosperous reign, and she deserves it without Charlotte taking it off her. Well, the worst part is I don't think they've wrestled each other, as far as I can remember. Have they?
Io and Charlotte?
Yeah, Io and Charlotte. I feel like...
I think maybe once.
Yeah, it hasn't been like a long, like a feud with them. They haven't been in a feud, so I have a bad feeling that she'll be in one just because. But yeah, I think Io's going to have a pretty long reign because, I mean, at this rate right now, there's not much competition, but also she's earned it, so... Yeah, I was excited to see Io cash in, and it was a really good one too. And it's just like, you know what? This is what happens when you actually let the women hold on to the briefcase for more than, you know, a day. Shit like this can happen. That crowd went nuts. I mean, yeah. That crowd went unglued. So, yeah, funny how patience can be rewarded sometimes, and I'm glad they learned their lesson from the last few cash in attempts.
Yeah, that's the thing with the cash in that I realize is that, like, this is why the Money in the Bank has been around for so long, and really they shouldn't get rid of it, is because no matter who's holding the briefcase, like, whenever their music hits, they sprint down to the ring, and you realize they're cashing in, like, they're serious this time. It's like, oh, here we go. Like, it's always been that sort of feeling. So that's why I feel like the Money in the Bank concept still works. It still gets over with the fans. It still gets you the reaction. And it gives you the moments like with what happened with Io. So it works.
Yeah, I completely agree. So it has our stamp of approval. So please do not ever get rid of it. We're begging. Alrighty. So Jeff's been hearing reports that Bushiroad is trying to reduce costs when it comes to their bigger deal contracts. If they cut some of their highest paid talents, would we like to see them come to the U.S.? He would personally love to see Mayu Iwatani join WWE and have a Daughters of Stardom reunion with Io Shirai. That would be, oh, that'd be wild, wouldn't it?
Yeah. There's some great talent out there that, you know, would do great here in the States. Because I think the exposure that they get online, you know, with the hardcore wrestling fan base, like they come to the States and it's like automatically like the hardcore wrestling fan is like, I gotta see that person. So they have a lot of star power to them. You know, and as we said before, you know, especially with the women's division in both promotions, it's severely lacking. It's like, it's not lacking quality, it's lacking quantity of bodies. You know, everybody just keeps going down with injuries. Some have like personal things going on in their life. They're starting families and things like that. So yeah. It's like, it's a tough time for women's wrestling. So bringing some unique overseas talent that not a lot of people have seen. But the thing about, especially like Joshi Wrestling, is everybody is this big sort of out of the box character with their presentation that you look at them and before you see what they do in the ring, you're just drawn to them because they're all very colorful and they're all the presentation that they bring. And that's without the big production of like a WWE or an AEW. So imagine if they go to those places and bring that presentation, but also have the big production behind them. It would be fantastic.
I completely agree. We need some fresh faces because I think sometimes you get kind of bored with the same old, especially when promotions tend to just keep using the same people over and over and over again. So it would be nice to inject some fresh blood in there every once in a while. So, yeah, I would be fully on board with some of them coming over. It doesn't matter if it's WWE or AEW because we watch them both. And they'd bring some quality talent to them. So, I say I'm all for it. All right, and Jeff's last question is early reports are that Kairi is putting off all of her commitments in Japan until after September to embark on a new voyage, which those same people are reporting is a return to WWE. So nice. Do we want to see her return first off, and how would we have it happen? Jeff would personally love to see Io, Kairi, and Asuka team up and run roughshod over the women's division, but I would also love for Kairi to get the singles run that she deserves. I mean, I'm all for Kairi coming back. Like, we know how good of a talent she is. Hell, I mean, I think a very fun way would be have her come back. Like, if Shayna continues to just demolish and dismantle the division, have her come back to be the, like, hero to save the day.
Because they
literally have chemistry and a rivalry.
I was actually thinking the same thing, because based on their history with each other, I think it would be great. And Kairi was like one of the first ones to like vanquish Shayna and like make her seem human almost, you know? So like there's some history there. I love Kairi. I think she's phenomenal. I haven't been able to see what she's been doing in Japan, but I missed that elbow drop, you know, and like, I think again, it's a lot of like, the Joshi style. It's just like presentation wise, you kind of find these women very personable and everything like that. I flash back to the video that WWE put up when Kairi was done with the WWE and she was on her way out. They made this big video for her saying goodbye to the fan, and they don't do that for everyone. There's a reason they did that for Kairi. I think it's because they saw the value in her. They saw what she brought to the table, and she's a hard worker. She doesn't seem like she ruffles any feathers. She seems like she's universally loved. So for them to do that video when she was leaving the WWE and she was only there for like 3 years, you know, it says something about her character and her body of work. So you want people like that around.
Yeah, I completely agree. So if she is coming back to WWE, I am all for it, because now she has some new people she could take on. She has some old people that she can take on. She can, like Jeff said, team up with Asuka and Io or have a rivalry with them. Like, that would be fun. The possibilities are endless. So I'm hoping it happens. Obviously, we don't know if that's true or not, because they are just rumors. But if it were to come true, I wouldn't complain.
Me either.
Alrighty, so that was all of Jeff's questions, so thank you as always.
Thank you, Jeff.
Let's move on to Jack's questions, and his first one is, apparently Triple H and Tony Khan are kind of on the same wavelength of having one women's match on their programming at a time. What are our thoughts on this Becky versus Triple H social media press conference beef? I mean, it's Becky. Becky loves trolling on social media, so this does not surprise me at all. And then... Yeah, Triple H, I mean, it's tough because you can see his point where he's like, I mean, he essentially said, we're not going to move a rumor, essentially. They never fully announced that. It was kind of that cop-out of like, well, we never officially announced it was going to be Trish and like Becky at SummerSlam. It was just like implied, so you can't really... It was just kind of a cop-out answer, I thought, where it's like, well, we never officially made the match, so it's not like it got cut, because I'm pretty sure he said we don't cut ideas or something like that. It was a very odd answer, but it was just like, okay, I get that it was never fully announced, but when that's where the story was heading, you kind of have to do something, and that match deserved more than being put on a Raw.
I'm actually of the opposite. Like, in terms of, like, the Becky Triple H, I don't think it's a beef. Here's the thing. No. Like, the difference between Tony Khan and Triple H, Tony Khan, there's a difference. There's more similarities between Tony Khan and Vince McMahon in the sense that they're very thin-skinned, you know? Yes. They don't like to be criticized. They don't like to be poked or prodded. Triple H, on the other hand, he kind of rolls with it, you know? Yeah. Like, I guarantee you, like, the lemonade stuff that Becky was doing on Raw,
love that.
Triple H probably found hilarious.
Yeah, he probably thought, you know? Yeah, he thought it was funny.
Yeah, he had to have thought that was hilarious. Not only that, but like WWE was using it to like tweet like who does it better, Becky or Triple H. So they're clearly in on it. Like I don't think there's a beef. I don't, you know, and but as far as like the match itself, yeah, would have been good on SummerSlam. Yeah, of course that would have been great, but my guess is that this match is going to main event Monday Night Raw. And like Triple H said, you know, like there's only so many matches that you can put on a pay-per-view card and make sure that it gets enough time. Each match is logical, you know, gets the chance to tell a story and get the chance to give the people what they paid for, you know, and that probably with the amount of matches and what was going on for SummerSlam, that probably wouldn't have happened with Becky and Trish on the card. Because here's the thing, the women got, this was the longest women's match, I don't know, in like PLE wise this year, or just overall, this was the longest one. So again, you take some shine off of them. Brock Lesnar, Cody Rhodes wrestled a very long match by Brock Lesnar standards. So you have to cut time. You have to cut time there. You probably have
pants off him. It was that long.
Yeah, exactly. Jesus. You probably would have to cut out the men's battle royal altogether, which takes the shine off of LA Knight. So there's a lot of logistics that like people don't seem to realize. So I think, again, would this have been great on SummerSlam? Sure, it gets the big PLE production presentation. But there's a good possibility that this is going to main event Raw. They've been at least keep giving it stuff to keep people interested. So when that main event happens this Monday on Raw, I think people will be satisfied. If they give it 15, 20 minutes, I think it's no harm, no foul.
Yeah, I think the problem is that people, when they buy into the rumors too quickly, they're like, oh, well, it was rumored that this is what they're doing at SummerSlam, so it has to happen at SummerSlam. And if it doesn't happen at SummerSlam, I'm mad. It's just like, would I have liked more women's stuff on the show? Yes, but it was fine for what it was. It wasn't like, it wasn't this glaring issue of like, oh, SummerSlam was just so bad. If we would have had more of the women's matches, it would have fixed everything. It's like, no, it was, the card was good for the most part. It was just like bad timing. Like, it was just, that just seems to be the problem with the women. It's bad luck and bad timing right now. But
pretty much.
Which goes into Jack's next question is, did Sasha and Naomi put a curse on those tag titles when they left? I'm starting to think they did at this rate.
I saw someone said that Alba Fire and Isla Dawn put the curse on the titles.
Well, I mean, yeah, that would make some sense. But yeah, it's like, God fucking damn it. Like,
it's these, the titles.
Save those titles.
I don't know what's going on.
Poor Sonya. Like, first off, I hope Sonya like recovered. I mean, for those who didn't hear, the fact that her and Chelsea have only been the tag champs for what? Not even a month?
Yeah, like 20 something days.
And she tears her ACL. So it's like, what the fuck is going on? Like, and the worst part is that they were hoping to do some things with them and their title reign. And it's like, now what do you do?
She tore her ACL, so she's going to be out
a while.
Probably a year.
Yeah.
Which is because Bayley tore her ACL and was out. What's going on with women tearing their ACLs in wrestling?
I don't know.
It's like the most common injury for the women in wrestling. It's insane. Yeah. But yeah, she's going to be out for quite some time. It sucks because she was finally finding her groove in the ring. Her and Chelsea's chemistry was taking off, so it was working, and people were like, okay, this is finally we get a team to invest these titles in, and then this happens.
Dan hasn't even stopped cursing the women. That's what this is. It's Dan.
Yeah, I feel so bad for the women. I feel bad for Sonya. I feel bad for Chelsea, you know, because it puts her in limbo. It's like, what do they do with Chelsea now? Yeah. yeah, it's just I don't know. I and it's always these freaking tag team titles.
This literally is though. Like, what is fucking going on? I don't know. Like, I legit do not know. It's just pain. It's pain.
It's no fun.
No, not at all. All right, what are our thoughts on Sheamus's comments? And for those that don't know, he pretty much said, I don't know why WWE didn't, like, capitalize on my momentum from Clash of the Castle, which is something we've said before, that's for damn sure. So, I don't have a problem with him saying that, because I feel like if I was in the same position, I'd say the same thing. Everything was going well, people were behind me, and you guys did nothing to keep it going. You just, like, let it die.
I mean, here's the thing. Like, I get where Sheamus is coming from, but here's the problem. A, he was going up against Gunther, who's in the midst of this title reign that's historical, and they clearly want to push this title reign as historical, and it's done wonders for Gunther. So there was no route for Sheamus to go there. And
no.
I'm sorry, but Sheamus isn't as interesting as Roman Reigns, you know?
It's just bad timing.
Yeah, it is bad timing. And the main reason that came about is because he's like, well, Roman Reigns only wrestles 5 times, you know, and he gets all this promo time and all that. I get that. I get the argument that Sheamus is presenting. But again, it goes back to my earlier point. The reason the WWE product is so popular right now and profitable, where they're breaking all these type of financial records, is basically on the back of Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
Unless you can bring that to the table and you're not Roman Reigns, if you can't bring that same energy to the table where you're like, yeah, give me the ball, I'm going to run with it and we're going to keep making money, it is what it is.
Yeah,
you're not Roman Reigns. I'm sorry. I love Sheamus. I love his work ethic. I love his style. I think his match with Gunther was phenomenal. One of the best matches of the year, no doubt. You know, and they probably could have kept going on with a little bit more, maybe a rematch here and there. But again, like you said, it's just bad timing. You're not going to take the belt off of Gunther because he's in the midst of this believable record-breaking reigns. And I'm sorry, you're just not – there's no Roman Reigns except for Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
That's the end-all, be-all. So, in a sense, like, instead of saying they're not giving me the ball to run, why not say, well, put me in the ring with Roman Reigns? Try to build up a story with me and Roman Reigns. I'm not saying I'll win, but I'll make the story credible and believable, and fans will enjoy it. And then you show your worth there, you know.
Yeah.
Everybody has to realize, in wrestling, in the big promotions, you're just a cog in the wheel, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I understand having the wrestler's ego, and I understand you want to be the best, you want to be at the top of the mountain. If you're not in this game to get there, you're probably in the wrong profession. It's just realize your position here. Realize who you're up against. You're up against Roman freaking Reigns.
Yeah, there really is no contest at that point.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I love Sheamus, but there's no way you can give the belt to Sheamus and be like, yeah, that's as interesting as it is with the bloodline. That's just not true.
Yeah, it's nice to have at least that confidence in yourself where you're like, I could totally take him, blah blah blah, whatever. But at the same time, it's like, all right, like, you got to be at least somewhat realistic, I guess. But
yeah,
I mean, with the proper storyline, maybe it could be believable, but just right now it's like, no, like, not a chance.
Not good timing.
No, that seems to be the recurring theme with a lot of things. It's just not good timing. But we did touch on this a little bit before. What's next for Cody? It doesn't really feel like anyone on Raw is on his level. I mean, that is true. But like you had said earlier, it doesn't really matter what they do with him because it's going to be good anyways. So it's a matter of just what are they going to do with him? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, at first, because there was that rumor that came about that they're redoing the story with him and Rollins, and everybody was like, oh, him and Rollins again. But then you see what they did on Raw, kind of putting a little hitch to the story. Like, they're really not getting... I think that was the one thing that we were missing from the other matches. Like, yeah, there was some animosity, but, like, this kind of feels like real-life animosity. Like, they're just... They're just not friends. They can't coexist with each other for some reason. So, in that sense, I'm not mad if they revisit the Seth Rollins-Cody feud, but then you add Shinsuke into the mix, you know, now, and that's fresh, you know, so it's, but again, it's Cody Rhodes. That man is bulletproof. He's Teflon, you know. Yeah. He's just so good. He appeals to the masses. He appeals to the hardcore WWE fan, the adult, the kids love him. Yeah. You know, he's just, he could run for president and probably get a lot of votes.
Probably. Like, I wouldn't even be surprised at that at this rate, but goddamn. Yeah, I mean, we'll see where this thing maybe with Rollins goes. Who knows? But until then, I just enjoy seeing how loud the crowd gets when they sing a song. It gets
ridiculous
loud. Like, goddamn. I'm just glad they finally caught on to, you know, singing it. Like,
yeah. Sing that and stop singing Judas.
Yeah, please. Like, which that's okay. I'm just going to go on a slight little, like, off the rails tangent for a hot second, because I said it to my mom, and I'll say this again, and I'm sure you'll agree with me. I am so fucking sick and tired of every time Jericho has a faction, it's the same shit every time. Like, literally, everything's great. We're running all over everybody, even though they're really not. It's just, oh, everything's just great. Oh, well, now there's animosity. We have to have a mandatory team meeting. Fuck these team meetings. I'm over them. Dumb. Like, as soon as I thought, oh, the Jericho Appreciation Society's having a team meeting, I'm like, you mean like the five they've had before with the Inner Circle? Like, come on. Do something new. Like,
go off.
It's so stupid. Like, I'm so tired of it. It's just like, can you give us something that we haven't seen 50 times already? Like, because you know what's going to happen. Everyone's going to blow up on each other and this and that. And, oh, this could be the end of the JAS as we know it, which no one cares. Like,
no one really cares.
Who fucking cares? Like, all of them would be better off without him, honestly.
Yes,
but,
for sure.
Anyway, Jack has a comment to Paul Heyman. He has watched enough Mets games to know two things. You can't win a game in the third inning, but you can sure lose a game in the third inning. Feels like the directions would be clearer for Cody with the belt, and the Bloodline could feud over the Tribal Chief moniker instead. Well, you know what? I also know, as a Pirates fan, you can also lose a game in the first inning. I know that very well, so, I feel that. I feel that pain, but
you know, it's funny. The Yankees are having a horrible season, and yet it's still going better than the Mets and the Pirates.
Yeah, which, you know, I'm so used to mediocrity and just terrible, so it doesn't faze me anymore. So it's like, this is the life of a Pirates fan, I guess. I tears in my eyes, but yeah, no. Jack does have a point, though. I feel like, if you had the belt on Cody, it would be a little more believable to be like, okay, well, there's could be at least 1, 2, and 3 guys that he could feud with, and it could be like, oh god, is this going to be the time he loses the title, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bloodline could easily do the whole Tribal Chief thing without the belt. Like, that's another good point, too, where that could be also a believable thing. Which also, was it just me, or were you also confused on SummerSlam when they're like, oh yeah, they're doing the Tribal Chief moniker thing, and then they never mentioned the title for a while? So I'm like, is this a title match, or is it a Tribal Chief, like, moniker match? Like, it was kind of weird with the announce team, I guess, but
yeah,
confused me a little bit, but yeah, that could be a believable storyline in and of itself, who's the real Tribal Chief, but, yeah, it's just, I feel like, I don't know about you, but I feel like it could potentially give fans, like, a sense of unease, where Heyman's like, hey, you know the storyline that's been going on for the last, like, you know, 2-3 years at this point? Yeah, we're not even, like, a third of the way done with it. You just see that, and like you and I said, we're like, oh god, please tell me you're joking, because it's just like, what else can you do?
Yeah, it's purely from an emotional standpoint. I don't think my emotional stability can take so many twists and turns. So like when Heyman said he was at the bottom of the third, I was like, are you kidding me? Like, there's no way. There's no way. But you know, he's right. You know, like he said, you can't win in the third inning, but you can certainly lose. And that goes to the point I was making earlier, is that they walk a very thin line at this point where you can lose all the equity you've built up in the past 3.5 years in an instant, you know? So they walk that fine line. Do I have trust in them that they can get it done, that they can see it through? Sure, without a doubt. It's just like, it's a little bit of trepidation. So I'm interested, but I'm also like interested with bated breath. Yeah, like I wouldn't say skeptical. Like I believe that they can get. Yeah, I'm just nervous because I'm not the type. Like, if let's say a little bit of it goes south, I'm not the type to shit on it completely. But like, I know the internet community,
the majority of fans will.
Yeah, one little misstep, and
it's gone.
Yeah, and it they'll discredit the entire thing. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yep.
You know, I just hear Daniel Bryan in my head just yelling "fickle." You know,
every time. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, so that I think my trepidation, maybe my nervousness, comes from I just don't want to have to deal with hearing mindless drones going, oh, this is why the bloodline ran its course and became a failure. Like, no,
I don't want to hear that, where it's like, this should have ended at blah blah blah, this should have been blah blah. Like, please shut up.
Yeah, I get it with the whole Cody situation. Cody should have won at 39. Sure, I was on that boat too, but you got to look at it this way. If Cody would have won at 39, we probably wouldn't have gotten all this great stuff with the Usos that we're getting now. So
then
it's like,
who knows, he could win at 40.
Yeah, which I'm banking on he's winning at 40. Like, I'd put my house on it.
That's going to be a wild reaction if we can get there. That's for damn sure.
Yeah.
That's a whole other story for probably next episode. What I'm gonna have to end up doing in my job just to try to get these tickets, but
yeah,
we'll save that for next week. All right, so I'm glad Jack brought this up, because there was no reasonable way I could have brought this up without someone asking about it, and that is the fact that RTBS champion Chris Statlander needs to be squatting the interviewers every interview she has going forward. And you know what? God, I wish that were me. I saw that and I'm just like, God damn it. I'm like,
yeah, I was jealous of Renee.
And I just love how she wasn't even fazed by it. She's like, all right, I'm just going to keep, you know, asking the questions, whatever.
Yeah. I was watching with a couple friends of mine, and one of them wasn't a wrestling fan, but he was watching. He was like, that's fucking awesome.
Right? It's just after I was done laughing, the first thought I had after I was done laughing was, God, I wish that were me. I wish that were me, but it was funny. It was good. I definitely think that, yeah, that's how Stat needs to do it from going forward. It's just squatting every interview, any interviewer, any just random person backstage, she needs to do it.
Oh, man.
Love it. Alrighty, so thoughts on the Elite re-signing with AEW and the collision tease that they made?
As far as them signing with AEW, re-signing with AEW, I think it's great.
Yeah,
because, I mean, if you would have lost any one of the four, the foundation would have just been gone, you know? Yeah. It would have been catastrophic. So for them to lock up all four of the Elite, it is great. It's great for AEW. It's great for the AEW fans, because they do bring... They have that presence, that aura, you know, that they're the real deal. You know, so it's great, and I'm glad they did it, because again, if AEW would have lost any of them, because if Hangman would have went to WWE, cool, he would have been the literal rocket would have been strapped to him.
Oh yeah,
like that. Same thing with Kenny. And then. You get, if the Young Bucks would have signed with WWE,
oh boy,
the Usos probably don't break up, because literally a dream match would be the Young Bucks versus the Usos.
Yeah.
The super kicks would have been insane.
Everywhere. I will insane. Say, I did find it funny that I think it was Kenny that said it, where the Elite kind of, they like, oh, the majority choice is where we'll sign. And then I thought, I swore he said something like, you'd be surprised who picked where. And I'm like, Kenny, what are you saying there? So it's like, well, there's four of them. So that means one of them picked WWE and clearly the other three picked AEW. But it's like, huh, that's a little interesting. But yeah, I'm... All in all, I'm glad that they're back because, yeah, if they even one of them leaving would have been like, oh, wow, this is not good because you already lost Cody and you're doing, I'd say just fine. Like, you're not, like, catastrophically failing. But if you lose anybody else like them, it's like, oh, God, this is not good at all.
Yeah. As far as them teasing, I think the tease to Collision was great because the idea that they can't go from Dynamite to Collision,
yeah,
for whatever reason, I don't give a shit that Punk's on Collision.
Yeah,
the idea that they can't migrate and do their own shit in their own company is preposterous.
This is the real Forbidden Door here. It's to Dynamite.
Yeah, it's just preposterous. And to be honest with you, I kind of hate it. I kind of think it's dumb.
They're trying to do the whole tribalism thing in their own company where...
Yeah.
Who was it on that one promo? Was it Punk, I think, where it's like, oh, Punk, the Colliders
and the Kaboomers.
And I'm just like, why are we doing this? This literally sounds like any internet wrestling community would try and do with AEW and WWE. Why are you doing that in your own company? Why would
somebody within the company throw shots at the prod, like, especially Punk? Yeah, especially Punk of all people, who did this already?
Yeah, like, can we not?
Haven't you learned your lesson? Like, it's better if we all at least look like we're fighting under the same banner. You know? Like,
yeah, that'd be great.
My God, this company.
But speaking of AEW, though, so Sheeta gets to hold the belt with fans finally. Please let this women's title reign be different, you know, like having feuds and stories. Yeah, that would be great. Though I did see, and I don't know how much you would agree with this, is that some people are pretty much saying, oh, yeah, it's just a transitional title. Whoever's going to beat her at All In. But it's like, okay, but who at this rate? Like, Saraya?
For a transitional champion to work, people already have to know who's in the next in line.
Yeah, nobody knows at this point.
Nobody knows.
Really? Like, it's got to be Saraya, I would think, just for All In alone.
But I hope she doesn't win.
I don't think she would. I hope not.
I hope not. I respect the hell out of Saraya. I respect her game and the amount of time that she spent in wrestling. But, like, I can't, like, again, like I said, when you're a champion of a division, you're head and shoulders better than the rest, and you can carry that pressure on your shoulders because you're a champion. Yeah. I don't see Saraya being able to handle that pressure.
Ew, not at all. Not at all. Worst part is as much as I would love to, you know, try and say something about Jamie, it's not happening. So it's like, well... Never mind. It's fine.
We can't get what we want.
Suffering is whatever. God. Whatever. On one of his shows, Brian Alvarez suggested that if Adam Cole turns on MJF and not the other way around, Adam should punch him with a fistful of quarters. Jack said, I thought that was diabolical and might actually turn MJF full face.
I don't like that.
I don't know if... I'm sure you and I would probably be in agreement here where it's like, I don't think MJF could ever fully turn face.
Mm.
Because in the back of my mind, you're always just going to be like, all right, he's just going to, you know, he's going to pull some jackass kind of thing at some point because that's just how he is. It's just like, how long is he going to, you know, keep the con going? It's like, I don't think anyone could ever believe he would actually be a good guy genuinely for a long period of time.
Right. In terms of Jack's questions about the quarters thing, I don't like that only because that has some like stereotypical anti-Jewish undertones to it.
Yeah.
So I don't want to go that route. No, I think the reason MJF brought it up in that promo was again to give people something to identify. This is the thing about this whole MJF situation. Like I was in agreement with you. Like I can't buy into him being a good guy character, but then he tells a story about being bullied, having ADD, and having that rejection disorder. You know, and you're like, fuck, man, that's heavy. You know, that's heavy. And then he tells a story about getting picked on because he was Jewish, and you know, the bullies throwing change at him, and you know, pick it up, Jew boy. And that was just like, oh, so like, if he doesn't follow that up by being a good guy, and in turn uses it to screw Adam Cole, like it's like, this motherfucker is evil.
Yeah.
I can't trust anything he says. And it's to the point where if he tries to pull another, I was bullied as a kid and made fun of it, be like, good, like, no, you deserve it. Like, you know,
yeah,
you know, so exactly. It's like, I like messing with the psyche of a wrestling fan in that way.
Yeah.
Is dangerous territory, you know? But again, I do think Adam Cole turning on MJF would be a very interesting concept, because you know, a friend of mine had brought that up when we were watching Collision and we were waiting for MJF to turn on Cole after they lost that match.
Yeah.
And he was like, what if it's the other way around? And I was like, oh, that's actually pretty interesting how they could pull that off.
But that kind of would completely destroy the entire like comeback story they've built with Adam.
Yeah.
Whole concussion thing. So it's like,
yeah,
guys, you kind of booked yourself into a bit of a pickle.
This is why I hate this whole fucking friendship thing with Adam and MJF. It just for the tag tournament, fine. But to not end it there, and again, I'm not gonna go crazy like I did last week, but again, not to follow the logical path of logical storytelling. Because if they would have followed that path, within 2 to 3 weeks, the fans that were like, oh, you got to keep them together because this was so entertaining, they would have forgotten about it.
Exactly.
You and know, so you're doing this to placate the wrestling fan for maybe a month long pop. You know, it's just not worth it. You can't get in your way. Yeah, you can't get in your way, man. Like, this is why people have gripes with AEW.
Yeah. That's why we have gripes with AEW, and we're fans.
Yeah.
Yeah, so now I would say absolutely do not do the quarters thing.
Yeah, that's just a little too dicey and a little too controversial.
Yeah, let's not open the can of worms on that one. So now to a fun question. Which wrestler do we think throws the best barbecue? There's only two answers for me. And one of them's obvious, and the other one probably isn't. Shayna, obviously, because if you watch her stuff outside of wrestling, she loves to, like, smoke things and has, like, her own smoker and everything, so...
Really?
Oh, yeah. She has, like, some of the stuff she makes, I'm like, god damn, I wish I was, like, her friend, just to, like, have a cookout at her place. The other's Baron Corbin, because his stuff looks always really good on his Instagram stories, so...
Yeah.
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 I'd say Corbin, and Shayna.
The stuff Corbin does with, that Chef Reactions guy is phenomenal. So I would go with Corbin and Braun Strowman. I've seen Braun Strowman do a couple things where he's like on the grill with some meat, and I'm just like, that looks really good, right? You know? So those would definitely be my two picks, man. A wrestling barbecue would be awesome.
Right? Like, give us all the good food. Like, we... At my core, I'm also a foodie. It's like a dumb phrase, but it's the truth. I like food. I like trying new things. So it's like, that would be a fun time, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I'm just fat. I like food.
we like food. we like food on the Ringside Rundown. But
yeah.
Alrighty. So that was all of Jack's questions. So Jack,
thank you.
Let's move on to Mike's, and Mike starts off with a bang, and we knew this was going to be something we had to talk about. The whole Lou Thisto debacle. Mike said, I won't act like I know who's telling the truth, but it's a shame that fans, in quote, made her get off Twitter. Yeah, you and I kind of talked about this a little bit off the air, obviously, and you pretty much said that she's always kind of been known for being a bitter person when it comes to wrestling.
Yeah.
And it was funny that you said the same point that MJF said eventually, so maybe he saw you tweeting about it, who knows, but...
MJF back in the day used to follow me on Twitter.
Wait a minute.
And then he stopped once he got too big for his britches. So I see you, MJF. I'm familiar with your game.
It's real. It's the actual beef here. You, but you two had the same point of, it just sounds mean, but it's almost the truth though, where it's like, she has been in wrestling for 20 something years.
Yeah, she debuted in 1997, so she debuted, like, right in the thick of the Attitude Era.
When I was a year old, maybe. That's great. Alright, anyway, moving on. So the problem is you have been wrestling for 20-something years, and in that time, you have only gotten tryouts with these big companies. So... usually that means there's something behind the curtain that they know about that they don't like. And it's, oh God, again, it sounds so scummy when you say it, because it's either A, you have a personality problem or like an attitude problem and they don't want any part of it, or they don't think you are that good. And it's so mean to say it, but it's just like, that's the only reasonable explanation that she wouldn't have gotten anywhere at this rate aside from just tryouts. And I just felt so bad, because when she was implying these meetings to complain about Thunder Rosa, even though those things never happened apparently, I think like Britt said no, Thunder Rosa was the one that called those meetings to like hash out the personal issues she was having or whatever. Poor Britt took the brunt of that, and she took it hard. Like, everyone just assumed automatically when Lufisto was like, oh yeah, just there's people backstage that just complain about people for the sake of complaining, and immediately everyone went to Brit. And it's just like, maybe we don't assume things, because I'm pretty sure Sean Ross Sapp said it's not Brit. Because I think he said he even talked to Lufisto about it.
Yeah,
and she said, yeah, it wasn't Brit. So it's like, maybe you guys stop assuming things and stop.
Sean Ross Sapp posted a video on YouTube. They had an hour-long interview session, and I watched the whole thing.
And so maybe, you know, cuts Brit some slack, like, please.
Everybody was getting strays there, though. Brit was getting strays. Sky Blue got strays for fucking reason. Of all people, Sky Blue?
Yeah.
Like, are you serious?
Yeah, the big bad, like, Sky Blue, though. Doesn't look like she'd hurt a fly. Yeah, okay. Like,
she didn't deserve that. And you know,
none of them did, really.
Yeah, like, nobody did. Like, it, as we said before earlier, women's wrestling is in a bad spot.
Yeah.
And this didn't do it any favors.
Well, and for her to also be like, well, they complain about people backstage. It's like, okay, welcome to literally any job anybody has ever had, ever. Like, that's not a revelation. Like, you cannot... okay, and if anyone disagrees with this, you're fooling yourselves or you're just lying flat out, where it's like, you mean to tell me that even at a job that you like and enjoy going to, like, I like my job, obviously, I'm still there. Are there things about it that frustrate me sometimes and you complain about it? Yes. That's just human nature in a workplace where you and your work friends... oh, you're dealing with this shit again too? Yeah, tell me about it. Oh, I know. It's so fucking frustrating. It's literally anywhere. It is not a revelation just because it's a wrestling locker room. Like,
yeah.
People took that way out of context or just way too far. And it's just like, God damn it. Like I said, Danhausen needs to stop cursing the women's wrestling in general. I don't know what's happening. It's just like, Jesus, guys. Like,
yeah.
Calm down.
Yeah, as far as, like I said, I watched the interview she did with Sean Ross Sapp, and I was just watching it, and it was kind of rambling.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't clear, concise. It was just kind of all over the place. But the main thing I looked at it was her timeline of whatever she saw happening happened 18 months ago.
Yeah.
So in that 18 months time, Ruby Soho and Ty Mello squashed their beef.
Yeah.
I'm sure Rosa and Britt squashed their beef. Like, there's things that could have happened that could have quelled whatever situation Lufisto saw.
Yeah, she just came in at, like, the worst possible time when everybody was just imploding on each other.
Yeah, and not only that, but it goes back to the point I made to you and the point you just made. Lufisto's been in the game since 1997, and she has not been featured on TV aside from AEW Dark, which is on was on YouTube. It wasn't even on TV, and it was like a 4 or 5 minute match. I have all the respect for Lufisto in the world as a competitor, as a wrestler. She's done it all. She's been, again, in the game since 1997. But if you're using your brain, if she's been in the game this long and she hasn't even been thought of by WWE, they brought her into AEW, it just didn't work out.
Yeah.
At what point do we go, maybe she's the problem here?
Maybe, you know?
You know, like I said, like, let's put two and two together. That just doesn't happen. You don't have a career in professional wrestling since 1997, and you're still going, and you haven't caught a big break yet?
Yeah.
That's just crazy.
And she's not. You can't pull that, like, oh, well, I just don't want to go to those companies. I'm too good for them. It's like, yeah, okay, bullshit.
And that was always her thing. That was always her thing. She saw people getting opportunities, and she would take pot shots at them online. She's known to do that. She's I'm sorry, but she's kind of toxic. And like, everybody's like, oh, well, she was bullied off of Twitter. No, she brought the heat to herself.
Yeah.
You
can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen, essentially.
Exactly. Like, you brought the heat. Like, you got to have the thick enough skin. You can't just accept, like, she expected everybody to rally around her.
Yeah.
No. You know, when she's taking shots at AEW, and you think the AEW audience is going to go, oh, that's Lufisto, so we definitely have to take her thoughts with me. Nobody knows who the fuck Lufisto is. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. It makes me sound mean and hurtful, but let's be honest here. Let's be real here. 1997, and you still haven't gotten a job with WWE. You can't get a job with AEW. Like, something's wrong here.
Mm-hmm. Something's fishy here.
Yeah, something's fishy. And she, like, it came off as catty. It just came off as petty because she didn't get FaceTime with Tony Khan like she was told she was going to get. And, like, again, taking pot shots to Sky Blue?
Yeah, of all people. Like, poor Sky.
Like that's just... the only thing I will say where AEW kind of messed up is, like, they all at the same time hit send tweet. And
oh,
so
it
was a barrage of just, she's wrong, she doesn't know what she's talking about. But it almost came off as, like, nobody's gonna beat us up except for us. Like, you know,
I mean,
like,
literally,
nobody's gonna take shots at us. We're gonna beat each other up. Nobody else is gonna be able to do that. So that was the only thing I felt like was a little off. If they would have, like, spaced their tweets out, it would have been better. But, like, yeah.
I mean, good just... thing for, like, unity, but also, good lord, my Twitter's on fire right now. But
it was amazing. I feel bad that she felt like she was bullied. I hope her mental health doesn't take a hit, you know, but it's one of those things, like you said, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. She
Especially
brought it to herself.
You caused.
Yeah, she caused it, but she expected everybody to be on her side.
Yeah.
And yeah, that just, yeah, it wasn't going to work.
No, that didn't work. So, from one controversial person to another, is it time for a company, any company, to sign Tessa Blanchard, or is she still too toxic?
I don't think that's a good idea.
Yeah, it's like, well, let's put it, well, kind of like going off of what you said about Lufisto, she still hasn't been signed by anybody. Maybe there's a reason for that.
And the thing is, like, Tessa Blanchard, for all the shit that she's done and said and all the horrible, she's pretty good. I'm not gonna lie. She can get better, but she's pretty good. Like, if she didn't have that toxicity to her, she probably would be working either of those companies.
Yeah.
But she's just the things that she's said. And these are not like, they're not like off color things. They're pretty horrible things.
Yeah.
You know, it's just pretty horrible. Yeah. It's just, yeah, I think she's damaged goods.
Yeah. She could stay away and we'd be like, okay, sure. Like, whatever.
Yeah. She's not missed.
So I agree. I'd be like, no. It's a big no for me. All right. So I got to pull this part up here. So, do we agree with what Zoe Stark said about why Trish and Becky were pulled off the SummerSlam card? And I have to go find it because I bookmarked it. All right. So she said, essentially, that Triple H is a smart man. There's a reason, guys. He's not just doing it to screw the women. He's not. He's doing it because he wants to make sure Becky and Trish get plenty of time or have plenty of time to do it, which is essentially what we talked about earlier, where if you want to give... Because here's the thing, and we've seen this happen before too. Fans will yell and scream and beg and plead for a match, and WWE's kind of like, well, we really don't want to do it here, but people are yelling for it, so I guess we'll like fit it in for 5 minutes. And then people are like, well, why the fuck did you do that? It was 5 minutes. That could have been better. It's just like, you guys, be careful what you wish for, because you just might get it. And I guarantee you, people would have been pissed if they put them on the card and it was like a 5 minute match and that's it. And they would have been like, why the fuck would they only get 5 minutes? Why did they do this? Why did they do that? It's just like, well, they had enough on the card that maybe, like Zoe said and like you said, if you give them a 15 to 20 minute main event match on Raw, people will forget all about the fact that it wasn't on the card for SummerSlam. They'll just say, oh, that was a really good match. I'm so glad that they finally got to, like, mix it up with each other. And then there you go.
Yeah, that's basically it. If they were on SummerSlam, they would have got 5 to 8 minutes in the middle of the show and not enough time to pull off what they should have done, especially in what's considered a rubber match for the feud. Yeah. Flip that. You put them on Raw in the main event, give them 15, 20 minutes. They can definitely go out there and show off and show out. And people will probably talk about it for the next couple of weeks. You know, so it's like, I feel like people just, it's almost like selective rage.
Yes.
You know? Yes. You know, because again, the rage and the negativity gets the most attention online. Mm-hmm. You know, so you could just be like, no, this is hard. Because like, I saw a couple comments under that tweet, like, oh no, they should have cut some of the men's, like this is not a men versus women's situation.
No, and then if they would have cut the LA Knight match, you guys would have been pissed because he didn't get his moment again. It's like, well,
exactly.
You're gonna be like, unhappy regardless, so maybe just stop bitching about everything.
And they figured out a way to give the women their moment, which is have a main event of Monday Night Raw. Monday Night Raw is a hot show right now.
Yeah.
You know, people are tuning in. Everything is making sense. So why not put them in the main event? Again, it's just like you said. On SummerSlam, they would have got 5 to 8 minutes. It would have been a throwaway. They probably would have been in the same situation as Shayna versus Ronda in terms of the reception that they would have got, which would have done nobody any favors.
Not at all.
You put them on Raw, give them 20 minutes, and they can go.
Yeah, funny how that works when you give them time.
What do you want? Like,
he doesn't hate women's wrestling. He doesn't hate the women. It's like, shut the fuck up with that shit. And that like makes you sound like the dumbest person alive, especially when you saw what he did for NXT and the women's division there. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear that bullshit. So
yeah,
no, keep that shit to yourself. all right, is Jey Uso the most tortured person in wrestling?
That poor man.
I don't know how he his mental health would. I mean, if in a normal sense, his mental health's probably like non-existent. Like he's one inconvenience away from a psychotic break. Like,
and then they caught the cameras after the show, and he's in the middle of the ring, just openly weeping.
Yeah,
you know, just like, man, like I feel bad for what he's been through, but it's almost like. Like, we talked about Cody possibly dethroning Reigns and that coming full circle. But I really wouldn't be upset if Jay did it at all either, because it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. You know? I feel like Jimmy, I'll just try and call it now. And if we can come back to this after for SmackDown and we can see, I have a feeling Jimmy, why he did this was he'll say, if you would have just fallen in line, we wouldn't have had all these problems. Like, I think like my mom put it, like, because of this, I got put in the hospital. I was the one that was constantly attacked and, you know, blah, 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 whatever. He's just going to try to throw it back on Jay. Like,
right. Right. Yeah. Because that's the whole thing. There's little seeds that have been planted that people are discovering now, that they're putting clips up on Twitter, and they're like, I can't believe I didn't see, like, I didn't put two and two together.
Yeah.
But it's almost, you harken back to what Jay said before he kicked Roman and before he aligned himself with his brother. It was always, you know, that's your big brother. He's the MVP. He's the prom king. He's the most popular. You know, do as your brother, you know, and they brought the realness out of that. So I feel like this was in the plan all along to go this route. We just didn't see the Easter eggs. And yeah. now we're realizing it, and we're like, oh shit. Like,
it was always in front of us this whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So sure. I think that's what he's gonna try and throw it back on Jay and be like, if you would have just fallen in line, we wouldn't have to deal with all this stress and frustration, and I just got tired of it.
Yeah.
Bottom of the third inning. God.
That's crazy.
God, I mean, yeah, whatever. We're moving on, because we'll still talk about it for the next 50 episodes at this rate. All right, finally, Mike has a prediction, not a question. He says Adam Cole is going to turn on MJF at Wembley with the help of Roddy and Kyle O'Reilly. Ooh, wouldn't that be something?
I like the Kyle O'Reilly aspect, because Kyle O'Reilly is one of my favorite wrestlers.
Yeah.
Roddy's
a little stuck right now.
Roddy is a little tough, because, like, watching him freak the fuck out backstage,
like, the TV,
was,
yeah,
like, yeah, it was like, oh. And but it was like, oh, this is so good, because he lost his mind.
Yeah.
You know?
And you know, Kingdom get involved too, and it's just like, oh boy. Like,
right, and I completely forgot that Adam Cole was in the Kingdom,
because
I was like, why the fuck is the Kingdom there? And then, like, they showed a vignette, and I'm like, oh, that's right, he was in the Kingdom. I forgot about that.
Yeah,
you know. But the Roddy situation, where Roddy's kind of coming off as a little bit, like, clingy,
yeah,
and like a stage five clinger, like,
yeah, petulant child, you know? Yeah,
you know, that, so that's kind of interesting. It's just, whew. But again, I'm glad that everybody's probably seeing the flip side. Like, they could possibly go with Adam Cole, you know, doing something dastardly against MJF.
Yeah,
you know,
it's just a shame, though, because I feel like it's just for his story's sake. I'd rather him just stay a good guy, but this is what happens when you don't just do what you're supposed to do sometimes, and this is what we're stuck with.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that was all of Mike's stuff, so thank you as always.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, so our last few comments and questions come from Mom, and of course, you knew she was going to ask. She said, I don't understand the issue with the Ronda and Shayna match. It was always billed as an MMA rules match. I liked it. Okay, so obviously I agree. I thought it could have had some more to it, but like you said, I think it was just the fact that they never really explained it a whole lot. It was just, okay, next week it's an MMA rules match. That's it. Like, figure it out.
Yeah.
And I am like, granted, I'm just like, oh shit, they're going to kill each other. But I'm also like, what does that mean? Like, help. I don't know what's going on. So yeah, I feel like if they could have fleshed it out a little more, it was fine. Which is a damn shame, because the storytelling up to it was fucking fantastic. So
fantastic.
All you guys had to do was just put that same effort into explaining what the MMA rules match is, not just, yeah, we're going to kill each other. Like, no shit, you guys are going to kill each other, but it was just the bad circumstance. Like, we kind of talked about, it was a bad spot on the card, didn't really explain the match very well, supposed creative differences between Shayna and Ronda and the creative team, so it was just like a bad storm of just shit.
Yeah, I mean, it was, to me, it was serviceable.
Yeah.
You know, like, it wasn't it wasn't great, but it really wasn't bad. I would have a little bit more violence, a little bit more aggression.
Want a blood.
Yeah, maybe some blood. Just maybe a little some, bit. I mean, the shiner that Shayna was sporting, that was a good one. But like, yeah, and honestly, I think maybe they got their time cut a little. That's just a guess.
I wouldn't be surprised. Would not be surprised. Honestly, I was gonna say maybe accidental blood, not like AEW level blood. I honest to God thought that when Ronda had that step up knee, I thought she broke Shayna's nose. So I'm like, oh God, here we go. That's that blood I was talking about. But no, we just got her eyes swollen shut instead, which, you know what, it's just as bad. So yeah, it's just, I think they were done a little dirty, but you know, that's the business, unfortunately. So now I just hope that this just means Shayna gets her moment to shine and I can bask in the glory of it. And yeah, that's pretty much it. So could have been better, but could have been a lot worse. So
yeah,
I'll take it, I guess. So Mom thinks that the Cody Brock match was better than she expected.
Yeah.
Again, it blew the pants off Lesnar. It was that good of a match, I guess. Like, I don't even remember how that happened. I'll be completely honest. I was like 85% paying attention, like 15%. We were like making pizza at that point too. So we were trying to pay attention and do it at the same time. And then I look and the next thing I know, he is like, his pants are just like shredded. And I'm like, what the hell happened?
Thank God he was wearing briefs underneath.
Yeah, no, people that didn't. People still said stuff though. And I'm like, can we not be gross on the internet, please? Like, I know it's impossible to be not gross on the internet, but I'm just like, what the hell happened? Like, damn. But no, it was a good match. It did the job. Like you mentioned about it earlier, where Brock was kicking the shit out of Cody, and yet Cody still found a way to get that crowd behind him, and it worked. Right. So,
and I really wish, I want people to understand that this day and age, to be a good guy and to get your ass kicked and to have the crowd go, no, keep fighting, you're gonna like, to do that this day and age, like where everybody's so fickle and so like, just, what's the word, like they're so
short attention,
everybody's just so negative, you know?
Yeah, like, negative, yeah,
they can't buy into a feel-good story. But like, you saw it happening in real time, and that's the psychological aspect of this whole deal. That was like, to me, it was like, wow, like Cody's so good that he's getting people to cheer him on when he's getting the absolute shit kicked out of him.
Yeah,
you know, and the fact that this match went as long as it did, this is probably the longest Brock Lesnar match since 2015, you know.
Yeah,
so
I can remember.
Yeah, so it was just like, it was perfect. And then you can't forget the ending where Brock unplanned put Cody over and raised his hand and all that. That was just incredible, you know. And to find out that Lesnar did that on his own merit was something special.
It was wild. It was goddamn. It was just very good. And now hopefully Lesnar can take a break for a little bit, and Cody can do whatever Cody's gonna do. Obviously, as we also talked about before, congrats to our new women's champ. Long overdue. I agree. It was a good moment. It was a very good moment, because I was, when Bianca won, I was like, okay, I mean, like, yeah, good for Bianca that Lisa wasn't Charlotte, but I'm also like, are we gonna do this again? And then I totally forget. And that's, like you said earlier, the thing about Money in the Bank, where you just forget it for a split second, and then when the music hits, you're like, oh shit, I totally forgot this could have happened. And it happens every time, well, for the most part, every time. And yeah, I thought it was really good. Like I said, when Dakota came up onto the ring, I'm like, oh, like she's there too. I'm like, oh, I got the nice warm fuzzies. But it was good to see her, and it was good to see her walking. So that was good, even though she said she's a ways away from being back in the ring, which I understand, I guess. But it was just nice to see her there, to be there with Bayley and Io, which makes it even worse when Bayley, you know, does the thing that's probably going to happen. But you know, when that's going to happen, who knows? But I'm just glad that Io got her moment to shine, because she's more than earned it.
Yeah, I hope that they give her a long, prosperous reign. And again, it's like you said, like, I had the same situation where I was watching the match, the finish came, and I'm like, okay, Bianca won, but I'm trying to figure out, like, the logic behind why they would put the title on her. And then I was like, oh, Io. And then as soon as I said that, her music hit, and I'm like, yeah, here we go.
And then it was funny how it went full circle, too. Literally, at SummerSlam last year, Io and, like, Damage Control was a whole thing. And it just so happens that at the same time this year, at the expense of Bianca again. So, poor Bianca. Bianca's worst nemesis are Damage Control, because public menace to her, I swear. And then finally, we touched on it a little bit before, though, but Jimmy got some explaining to do. Yeah, you could say he does. Like I said, I still think that even if he doesn't play the, if you would have listened, Jimmy, this, or Jay, this would have all been avoided. He could just pull the, like, selfish act of, like, well, I'm the one that got hurt because of you fucking up. I got this, I got that, I got put through the table, whatever, and you just, you didn't do anything to help me, or, you know, that kind of stuff. But,
that's the interesting part is, what is Jimmy's angle in all of this? Why would he, obviously you jump to jealousy, because why would you steal that away? It's still your brother's big moment. Angst. You know, there's got to be a hint of jealousy there. There's got to be something there that's like scratching something we don't see, you know?
Yeah, because I don't know about you, when it happened, I'm just like, how the fuck are they gonna explain this on SmackDown? Like, you just, I'm like, why does it never ends? First off, like, it keeps going, but I feel like it has to be just, like, jealousy, a hint of jealousy, but mainly, like, angst, kind of, like, if you would have just, you know, fallen in line and just dealt with it, like, I wouldn't have gotten the shit kicked out of me, essentially, so thank you for letting me get sent to the hospital and just beat up repeatedly, I appreciate that, but also, it's like, I'm just sick and tired of you getting all these main event opportunities and I get nothing. I'm the one that always has to sit on the sidelines, so, yeah, I feel like it'll be angst with a side of jealousy.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested in seeing what the angle here is.
Yeah, because we're still in the bottom of the third, guys. We got
there's no way. I refuse to believe that Heyman.
What the hell's gonna happen if, like, somehow you and I both make it to WrestleMania. We're going to say at least one of us. One of us makes it to WrestleMania 40 this year. And they set all this shit up, and everyone's like, this is finally the year. He's going down. This is it. And he wins again. What the fuck's going to happen then? I'll just be like, God damn it, they did it again.
I don't know if I can, I can handle that.
No. We'll just be like, please no. Please say psych. Like, please tell me, like, but please no.
Again, I'm on board with everybody saying Cody should have won at 39, but again, I see the flip side in it, is like the continuation afterward, it has been just as good. You know, like Money in the Bank, London was fantastic.
And we
wouldn't have never gotten that if they would have put the belt on Cody. But like, bottom of the third, that's crazy.
Right,
like, that's God just damn. Crazy talk.
It never ends.
Never.
It never fucking ends. We're still here. It's fun, but also painful at the same time. God damn it.
Yeah.
Anyway, I do believe that is it. We did it. Wow. We did.
We
thing.
Did it. Oh, and we kept it under 2 hours.
I don't know how we did it, but we did it.
See, I almost lost it at the Lufisto part.
Yeah, me too. I'm just like,
I reined it in.
Like, all right, we can do it. And we did the thing.
We did. So, you know, if you're listening to this show, you made it to this part. Thank you so much for listening. Without you guys, there basically is no show. And we've been doing this for, this is episode 93.
Yeah. So we're
quickly approaching episode 100. We'll be giving out the details for that very, very soon, so stay tuned. Again, thank you guys for listening to the show. We appreciate it. This show is available on basically any podcast platform that you use to listen to podcasts. It's all on the major ones as well: Spotify, Apple, Google, Pocket Cast, basically wherever you listen to podcasts, this show is available. If you need a link so that way you can be able to share it with your friends, tell your wrestling friends or family members, hey, check out the show, just let us know and we'll send you a link to the podcast on a silver platter. But the caveat is you have to give the silver platter back because that's the only one we have and they're very expensive. So yeah, we need that back. to keep up with the show, follow us on Twitter and Instagram. It's at the same handle, so it's very easy for you. Just follow us at Ringside Rundown. It's available on Twitter and Instagram. So, you know, you constantly have, you know, tweets from us and stuff like that, especially when there's a PLE like SummerSlam. We like to be interactive. So don't be afraid to follow us there if you want to hit us up. If you have a question that you would like to have us answer on the podcast, that's the place to do it, is on Twitter. So make sure you follow us at Ringside Rundown. And if you want some cool wrestling pictures in your Instagram feed, you can follow us the same handle at Ringside Rundown. If you want to follow me and check out my daily musings on what's happening with wrestling, follow me at Wrestling Cron. That's wrestling, C-H-R-O-N. Shay, where can they get in touch with you?
Can find me on Twitter at ShayleneHixon21. Yeah, doing all the wrestling things, but also hockey and football season's coming up soon, so that's gonna take up a good portion of my Twitter. But we'll see. I'm excited for it.
I definitely love checking out your football pictures where you're all bundled up and freezing out there for the Steelers.
If I'm not dying of heat stroke, I'm dying of hypothermia. There's never any in between ever in Pittsburgh, but it's fine.
That's love for your sports teams.
Yeah. At least with the Penguins, I can sit in a cold arena with my jersey and not die of anything. It's like, this is great. This is why the Penguins are my number one team. But
yeah, so definitely check us out on social media. Check us out on Twitter. I'm not calling it X. It's still Twitter to me. Yeah, damn it. So make sure you follow us to keep up with the show. Please, if you have some friends that are into wrestling and listening to wrestling podcasts, don't be afraid to share the link. We can always use more people in our little community of friends. Obviously, you guys brought it this week with all of your questions to the point where we really didn't have to do a rundown of SummerSlam. You guys had it handled for us.
Yeah.
You know? Covered so all the bases. You make our job 10 times easier. So thank you guys for all you do. We'll be back next week with another episode of the Ringside Rundown, bringing you all of our thoughts on the world of professional wrestling. Until then, my name is Eric Vasquez. She is Shay Hixon, and we'll see you next time.
See you later, guys.